This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
We welcome you in. It is another edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM here on a Wednesday from the South Point Sportsbook Studio in Las Vegas. I'm Ben Wilson with Mike Pritchard. Look at us. We're back on the desk.
That's right.
It's so much fun, Pritch.
It is fun.
Filling in for Patrick Maher and Michael Lombardi today. We're a little over 24 hours away from the first game of the preseason. I know you're so super excited to watch a lot of Jake Luton for 4 hours, Pritch. I don't know that we're necessarily going to be betting that game, but it's at least some real life football. So
yeah,
we have that.
There's some intrigue, though. I mean, it is the kickoff to the season, and there's three calendar events in the National Football League, mm-hmm. as everybody knows. I mean, you got the draft, but you got the Super Bowl, which is number one, then the draft, and then the Hall of Fame. I mean, this is another convention for the National Football League, but looking forward to some intel gathering. You know, you want to know what is going on with Jacksonville and a new head coach, and you want to know what's going on with the Raiders and a new head coach, too. But most importantly, I finally get shoulder-to-shoulder fellow buff Cliff Branch into the Hall of Fame. It's a long time coming, way, way, way overdue. And that's going to be a sight to see once he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yep. It's going to be a special day. It's not really about the football on the field. It's about everything else. Were you ever part of teams that played in the Hall of Fame game? Were you able to be part of that?
My first year in Seattle, we went to the Hall of Fame game. And plus, as a player, you get to tour the Hall of Fame anytime you want. I was able to go up there and we played in that game. I tell you what, it's one of those games you just want to get out the way, especially as a veteran. I was in the league well over 5 years. I think it's my sixth year in the league. And it's just one of those games you want to get over with.
Fawcett Stadium in Canton, Ohio.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, the old high school turf there. Mm-hmm. Yes, Mike Pritchard, for those who don't know, NFL wide receiver for basically the entire stretch of the 90s into the early 2000s. And we'll get into some of the other NFL news and notes surrounding the Hall of Fame game, some other training camp things as well. Today on the show, Steve McAdam going to join us about a half hour's time from Point Spread Weekly. We'll have a good conversation, as always, with Steve Lufanicaro to talk some UFC. And that'll come up in about an hour and a half's time as well. Of course, the big story in the general sports world today, Mike, the passing of legendary broadcaster Vin Scully, who was not just a baseball guy. He was a football guy as well. You think about back in the 70s at CBS, he and John Madden were partners before Madden and Summerall eventually got together. So a guy who was just larger than life for people like me, grew up watching guys like Vin Scully, and really he was the person you tried to mirror yourself after, just an absolute perfectionist in every sense of the word, and you knew every single time you saw him doing a game, it was going to be an A+ performance. Always put the game above himself, never had any sort of ego on the air. Will be dearly missed, but with the beauty of Vin was that he is a true historical figure. I mean, he spans the entire litany, really, of modern Major League Baseball, where he started off covering Connie Mack and finished his career covering Clayton Kershaw. So just a remarkable figure who meant so much to people like me in the industry now, a guy we looked up to for so many years, but was also a big piece of the NFL, which not many people might realize on the surface.
Legendary broadcaster. I mean, I think that sums it up. It doesn't matter the sport, baseball, football, like you said, but a lot of people know Vin Scully from baseball. Legendary broadcaster. We remember legends like this and the influences they might have on you as a person or your career, too. I mean, Bill Russell, just talking to my dad about Bill Russell and what Bill Russell was meaning when he was, younger in age. And my age right now, legendary players that pass that might have been influential. I remember Walter Payton passed away. I mean, that impacted me before a broadcaster like yourself. And, you study these legendary guys and you understand what they're about and what made them legendary in the first place, whether it's the storytelling or whether it's the delivery or whether it's the pipes. I mean, all of these things. And, when they pass, it impacts you. Right. And I was just looking at the fact that his extraordinary career, what was standing out most to me in terms of the moments that he broadcasted. Right. Mm-hmm. And I saw and I fixated on the 20 no hitters that he was able to broadcast. Think about that for a minute. 20 no-hitters that Vin Scully was able to broadcast. And that's right there is just extraordinary. But a legendary career for a legendary person as well.
Yeah, and I certainly encourage everybody to check out. We had Brent Musburger on the Nightcap last night. Full interview with that is on our VSiN YouTube page. And for Brent, who was very close with Vin, mm-hmm. and those guys were true contemporaries. So it was a marvelous segment to get to listen to last night. And yeah, you start doing the, you know, how many chains of people do I need to get to actually have met Vin Scully. I guess I was one away. A bunch of mentors of mine who were close with Vin, but mm-hmm. yes, a guy we always looked up to, and he will certainly be missed fondly. MLB, NFL, and PGA Tour as well. People also forget that his general impact. You were still playing, right? When Walter Payton passed.
I was.
Yeah. It's amazing that, you know, the impact, as you say, the impact people have on you, and I'm sure for you too. I mean, with how close of a tight knit fraternity mm-hmm. making it to the National Football League is. And how, you know, you think about how you get your opportunity in the spotlight. It's a lot different than broadcasting, whereas Vin Scully showed, I mean, the professionalism day in and day out. It's more the longevity that's mm-hmm. the most impressive thing about Scully. The fact that he did it for, 80 years. It was just like you never had a bad day behind the microphone. Whereas, you know, for what you guys did in the NFL, I mean, you know, your average career is, 2.5-3 years for most players. So, you've got your shot. So, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's so fascinating how, depending on the career path, depending on the life and legacy, it kind of impacts you in different ways. I always think of Scully with the longevity and just the reminder of the professionalism. I'm sure for you playing, it had to be more of like, wow, just trying to seize the moment and understanding and not taking any time for granted because it can leave so quickly.
Sure, not only take anything for granted, Ben. I mean, it's also the impact, the mentorship. And I just mm-hmm. mentioned Cliff Branch. You know, he was somebody who mentored me coming out of college, and I was able to study him as I was evolving into a wide receiver, moving from running back. And, Cliff was just an extraordinary athlete, a track star, and then obviously, Hall of Fame football career mm-hmm. too. But Walter Payton was an influence because I was running back, and certainly, in that time frame in the 70s, it was Tony Dorsett, it was Walter Payton. I mean, it was guys like that. And I remember the impact of meeting Walter in Chicago before a game. He walks around the field and was able to shake his hand and just, oh my goodness, Walter Payton, right? And so Vin Scully, Brent Musburger, same thing. I mean, Brent Musburger here at VSiN, I tried to remember if he ever broadcasted a game of mine. Because mm-hmm. back in Colorado days, in the late 80s and the early 90s, or, we were the SEC. And so we were on CBS all the time. And I just can't remember. I know Jim Nantz called some games. But I can't recall if Brent was able to broadcast games or if he was in studio at the time. And we talked about that a little bit. But, no, it's just legendary figures. It doesn't matter the sport. They're just a legendary figure. And certainly Vin Scully is one of those guys. And you're fortunate enough to meet people like that can influence your career in any way.
It's hard to, just picturing, you look at – we put on the pedestal certainly like a guy in the NFL. So to imagine somebody like you as a player mm-hmm. being influenced that way, for most of us, we think, oh, man, you're at the very top of the pinnacle. You're in the National Football League. And then for you to say that about a guy you looked up to, it just speaks volumes because I think we all look. You have the perception of you make it to the NFL, you've made it. You are in the top 1% of anybody who will ever play the game. And then to say that about, from a guy already in that level to then say that about Walter Payton, and it kind of speaks volumes as well for people like us who are, in the industry too, who are at least able to have a career to think about Vin in just a totally different category. Kind of similar to what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody, we all look up to somebody. We all are influenced by something or motivated by something. And as a professional athlete, Ben, and it's no different than, being a professional broadcaster or whatever field you're in, what drives you? What gets you up? What energizes you? And if it's an influence of a person, if it's the impact of meeting somebody that you've always wanted to meet or that you've admired, but that's something that you gravitate towards. That's something that you lean mm-hmm. on. That's something that certainly would motivate you. So when you're done learning, when you're done trying to challenge yourself, then retire from whatever you do. But if you're still striving to be the best, then look to some mentors, look to some people that can influence you in a positive way.
That's absolutely great life advice. We get life advice from Mike Pritchard to start the show. All kind of circling around. Yes, the passing of Vin Scully lives a remarkable life, 94 years old, as he passes away last night. And I think everything you say, it can apply to so many facets of life, including us as sports bettors.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Look, even though there are certainly, it's not like we're curing cancer out here, but at the same time, it's kind of the principle, right? And mm-hmm. going about what we're trying to do every single day. At the end of the day, as Brent Musburger always says, it's all about cashing tickets. And so, you know, at least for us talking about this stuff, you can, you know, it's a good way to kind of step back here as we're getting ready to go deep dive and embark on the NFL season, right, which is the biggest betting stretch of the calendar year for essentially our industry, for everybody here. I think it's a good way to phrase it as we get into all this. And, you know, it's not like we're going to be betting the whole bankroll on tomorrow's Hall of Fame game, but it's more just the general, I would say, the contextual thought, right, to bring in going in. Because, you know, there are going to be there's always things you're trying to learn, trying to tinker your handicap approach. Mm-hmm. I know you've talked about this since the time you joined the network here a couple years ago. I mean, your approach is even for somebody like you who knows the game so intricately, you still changed the way you've tried to handle how you handicap games and go about your job.
Oh, absolutely. Gil Alexander was just in the studio. And, you know, I cannot wait to have a conversation with him prior to the season. So it's just looking for those type of guys or gals or people that can influence you in any way. And also can educate you. Like, I am still learning, even though I'm having a blast betting sports, I am still learning, and I cannot wait until this season, whether it's college or pro football, to have some action. So I'm looking forward to that, as well as having conversations with you and Gil and Brady and everybody here at VSiN. I mean, I'm so looking forward to that, because I think it's going to be a great year.
Absolutely. Hey, look, I always cherish the 2 hours we get on the desk. Sure. I get to hang out with Brich. This is awesome. Like I said, we still have a lot of great guests coming up today. Steve Mackinnon, Lou Finocchiaro, each to join us on the show. We have a ton of NFL news and notes to get to. We'll start with really the big injury news of the day coming out of yesterday's training camp. And one of Mike Pritchard's former teams, the Denver Broncos, they lose a big wide receiver in camp yesterday, fearing that he will be out, Tim Patrick, for the entire regular season in 2022. So I want to get Mike's thoughts on that when we return. Also get into a number of additional training camp storylines as we now get into really the meat of training camp right now. We'll also do some college football breakdowns, as well as previews of the MLB card for today. That and more is all still to come as we're just getting things started. 2 hour edition of the Lombardi Line here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back on the Lombardi Line from Las Vegas, South Point Sportsbook Studio, here on a Wednesday with Mike Pritchard. I'm Ben Wilson, and our producer behind the glass, Matt Santos. All right, Rich, look, we've got a lot of wide receiver news and notes. We could almost do an entire show just on wide receiver topics today. Mike Pritchard, former national champion as a Colorado Buffalo, longtime NFL wide receiver as well, Falcons, Seahawks, Broncos, and one of your former teams, Denver Broncos, who have a lot of buzz surrounding them this year, largely because of the Russell Wilson trade coming in. When you bolster what they have lacked at the quarterback position with a guy like Russell Wilson, a lot to like. However, yesterday, it's a wide receiver core that takes a pretty big hit where Tim Patrick, who is expected to be a breakout candidate this year, goes down in practice with a leg injury. They were able to confirm reports last night it was an ACL. And as a result, he is going to be out the entire season here. Pretty rough blow to have a guy like that go down August 2nd. We've talked a lot about the struggles of Jerry Jeudy, who's been in and out of the lineup with injuries. He struggled with drops. KJ Hamler could potentially step up as well. And so you look at a wide receiver core that, if you look at Pro Football Focus's positional rankings, Mike, they were a 10th. Denver was out of the 32 teams. Just to start here, where do you think this drops Denver to, just from the pure receiving core without a guy like him? And just how big of an impact do you view this being there in Denver?
Well, it is impactful. I mean, I think if you're in that wide receiving room for the Denver Broncos the last few years, I mean, Cortland Sutton went down with an ACL. KJ Hamler went down with an ACL. And now you got Tim Patrick with an ACL too. And you just don't want those things to happen, because you think you feel like you have it right with Russell Wilson at quarterback. They are going to miss him. He's a bigger body receiver, and I think it would have made it easier for Russell Wilson to throw to a target when you have a big tree out there to throw to, and a catch radius that Tim Patrick would present, you know, averaging almost 14 yards per reception too. But the next guy up mentality, I mean, Jerry Jeudy, I think a lot of people are expecting him to live up to the hype, live up to the billing in terms of being a first-round draft choice. So if Cortland Sutton can return to form, Jerry Jeudy rounds out and turns into what everybody expects him to be, they should be okay. I mean, you're talking about Tim Patrick from a third wide receiver. Even if he was going to be a second guy, he was going to present a matchup advantage for you. But I think at the tight end position, the Broncos can do that. Out the backfield, they can do that. And certainly with the depth that they have at wide receiver, they'll still be okay. Now, it does impact the depth, though. And we'll get into that with some other wide receiver injuries. But this isn't going to affect how I view the Broncos. I think they're still going to compete, certainly for the playoffs and maybe for the division as well.
53 catches, 734 yards, 5 touchdowns a season ago. So as you point out, very solid numbers for kind of a third rotational piece. But yes, it's more the depth thing where, look, outside the Sutland, Judy, Hamler trio now, I mean, Kendall Hinton's really the only guy who's had significant reps there in the Denver system. I just wonder, we always talk about, and we sort of joke about it, where you come to camp, everybody's in the best shape of their lives. Everybody is undefeated. They've all got the opportunity to go 17-0. From the locker room, what does that do? I'm sure you had that happen. Where I don't know if it was within your position group or just when you have a guy who the team is very high in general, who you figure will be a contributor. When somebody goes down this early, like, what does that do to the general locker room sense there when you're all together and you're so early in the whole process?
Yeah, it's devastating, Ben, because, you know, they don't have two-a-days anymore because they wanted to limit contact. They wanted everybody to be healthy for the season. Now, lo and behold, you have a guy who goes down with an ACL, jumping up for a ball, a contested ball, and so you don't want things like that to happen, especially in training camp. And you can't guard against it. It's 100% injury business. We know that going into it. But you try to take care of each other if you can. I think from an ACL standpoint, though, you just don't know when that's going to happen. Odell Beckham Jr., you know, it happens to him the way it did in Super Bowl. I mean, it's incredible. But, it's devastating. But I think the history of it, though, is something in the back of your head if you're a receiver in that room. Like I mentioned, Cortland Sutton.
It's got to be,
he
right?
still plays like he's favoring his ACL, though. Like, he still wears a brace. He did last year. I'm like, well, he's got a brace on. You know, but if that's in the back of your head, then that's in the back of your head. And I think, you know, KJ Hamler, when he comes back too, what is he going to be like? Is he going to be able to put it to the side, or is he going to be thinking about that significant injury? So if you're asking me what needs to happen in that room, Cortland Sutton as a premium guy, Pro Bowl receiver, needs to return to that form. Forget about the ACL. That's so far in the rear view now. And then Jerry Jeudy, he just has to step up and be highlighted. So maybe you look at some player props. You maybe look at the fact that he's paired up with a Hall of Fame type quarterback and that type of talent that can pay a lot of dividends out there for the Broncos.
Did you ever have a stretch like what Judy, probably not to the severe extent where he's dropping passes left and right, but did you ever have stretches like early in your career where things were not going the way you thought? And you as a first round draft pick, you know, there's that inherent pressure to try to live up to the hype and the expectations. Like what goes through your mind mentally when you have some of those early career struggles and what do you, cause you obviously had a very productive career. You were able to figure out a way to be super productive and you didn't have, you know, nearly the struggles that Judy had early on. But what goes through your mind as a player when those sort of things happen and how do you get out of them?
Well, it's a rude awakening. I mean, up until this point of Jerry Judy's football playing time, he's never really struggled, right? He's probably was the best athlete or best receiver in high school. And you think about Alabama, he was the best. And now you get to the National Football League and it's not the same because everybody else is either the best or they're better than you. So you just have to take that in stride and understand that. You know, for me, arriving in Atlanta with no pressure because Andre Rison was on the roster and Michael Haynes was on the roster, Deion Sanders was on the roster. I just wanted to fit in. And so there was no pressure on me, but yet I was able to settle in quickly enough to be involved in offense too. So that just increased my confidence level. And I think that's what needs to happen for Jerry Jeudy. He needs to have some success, increase his confidence level, but Russell Wilson will take care of that. It's so different, Ben, when you're playing with – you know, a quarterback, and I don't want to be discouraging about any quarterback, but it's just different when you're on a different level with a guy like Russell Wilson, as opposed to, I don't know, Drew Lock, right? And I don't mean to say that because he's a Mizzou guy.
No, I get it. Look, I understand where you're coming from.
But no, it's just different though. Like Drew Lock, if you're Jerry Jeudy, okay, I caught passes from Drew Lock, and here was an entitled young kid, just like me, but doesn't get it yet. And now I got Russell Wilson. I mean, if I'm not the first person in the building, there's something wrong if I'm Jerry Jeudy. So I think he could have an incredible, incredible year alongside with what Cortland Sutton established early on with his career going to the Pro Bowl.
And that's a classic case of how much do you look at something like a Jerry Jeudy 69.7. It was a sub-70 quarterback rating when targeting him. How much do you put that on him? How much do you put that on the very subpar quarterback play that, as the numbers will show us, we know that he's had over the first couple of years. Look at the props for this season. 72.5 on the receptions, 905.5 receiving yards, and then 6.5 touchdowns. And those numbers, I believe, have ticked up slightly But not significantly. Maybe like a, I think up a catch.
Okay.
Because we did these totals on Primetime Action last week, looking at some of these wide receiver numbers. So Judy's numbers may be up. I think they was at 90, if I remember correctly, like 901.5 on the yard, 71.5 on the receptions. Touchdowns were the same. So those have taken a slight tick up with Tim Patrick. But
right,
as you say, next man up. It's a cliche, but like somebody's got to fill
it. It's so true. It's so true. I mean, I think for Tim Patrick, and you think about the Broncos offense, not really that prolific the last couple years. Patrick was still getting, in 2020, he had 79 targets. Last year, he had 85 targets. So just put half of those targets on Judy and what he could present this year. I like his player prop situation. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that he's armed with a quarterback like Russell Wilson. He will be featured. I think the tight end position, too, will step up for the Broncos. It's going to have to, because you're down a second/third receiver. So where are you going to find those advantages from a matchup standpoint? It's got to be from the running back room or certainly the tight end position as well.
How about other wide receiver news? Because like I said, we could do this for the entire show here. Deebo Samuel just found these quotes really interesting coming out of Niners camp yesterday, where he essentially refuted a lot of the reports that came out this offseason that basically said Deebo was not interested at all in running the ball anymore. He wanted to be solely a wide receiver. Some of the exact quote was, He said he labeled those teams' plans on how to use him as a running back. He called it false, said he does not mind being used as a, quote, wide back. Didn't say running back. Wide back is kind of interesting. 3-year, $71.5 million extension, which just happened over the weekend. And this was from the press conference he had Tuesday. What do you make of those type of comments? Wide back? Are we going back to like 1964 with our terminology? Something else going on?
Are we going to go back to split end compared to tight end?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing. No, I mean, he's the ultimate weapon. He really is. I could admire what Debo's doing out there, but you got to keep in mind it's about contracts. It's about money. Whatever I need to say or whatever needs to be put out there in order to gain leverage, that's what's going to happen. If Deebo or his agent was putting it out there, yeah, he wants to go back to the East Coast. No, he doesn't, because he wants more money. That's all it is. First of all, it's money. And the second of all, it's money when it comes to players in the National Football League. And he wanted a new contract, and the 49ers understood that. And they certainly was going to get a deal done, whether with Garoppolo and releasing him or whatever's going to happen there, or they're just going to find the money to pay Deebo Samuel. He is the ultimate weapon in the National Football League. Wide back, running back / wide receiver, he's ineligible. And that's how you got to view it from a betting standpoint. How can I find an eligible that I can bet or align myself with that can benefit my bankroll? Because he's an incredible eligible out there for the offense for the 49ers.
950.5, the receiving yardage prop. Keep in mind, Trey Lance this year. Jimmy Garoppolo, he's cleared. He's just hanging out on the side fields, Mike. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Just throwing by himself, just picking daisies, having the time of his life, man. Jimmy G. 950.5, an interesting prop this year. No rushing props, if you're wondering, out there right now for Deebo Samuel. All right, when we return on the Lombardi line, Steve Mackinnon going to join us, share his college football quarterback rankings as we continue our previews on CFB. That is next. The VSiN College Football Guide is out now. Start your football season on the right foot with expert profiles of all 131 teams, including team trends, power ratings, and over-under recommendations, plus our best season win total bets, Heisman hopefuls, and playoff predictions. The only way to get access to this year's football betting guide is to become a VSiN All-Access subscriber. Sign up early, and for a discount of $175, you'll receive the college and pro football betting guides along with a full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl. Or join us for $40 a month and see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Back on the Lombardi line, presented by BetMGM with Mike Pritchard. I'm Ben Wilson. We were just talking last break, Mike. In 7 days, finally get a little vacay, heading up to Spread Eagle Lake there in Wisconsin. Mike's favorite place.
Oh, my goodness.
He's got the invite. You can come anytime.
I might not leave. might not leave.
Lovely northern Wisconsin. I just bring that up because we go to our resident Wisconsinite right now, Steve Mackinnon, who you can follow at Steve Mackinnon, by the way, on Twitter. The big contributor to our recently published college football betting guide. We'll be doing the same for the pro football betting guide as well. A big write-up as well on some of these quarterback rankings in the college game in Point Spread Weekly. This week, first off, though, Steve, since you are there in Wisconsin, what do you make of the trade deadline here? Brewers send away Josh Hader, one of the best closers in the game. Do get a very nice haul for him. How did you view what the Brew Crew did there at the deadline with a now 2-game lead in the NL Central?
Well, I tell you what, I think we talked about this last week when my bullpen ratings came out. Hader was struggling. I have to think that the Brewers must have seen something that they didn't like that was going to maybe push forward maybe the rest of the season. The free agent after next season, almost impossible that they were going to be able to keep him the way Milwaukee does things with their free agency dealing. So, had to get something for him, I guess. Hopefully Milwaukee's loss isn't too much of San Diego's gain, in my opinion, I guess.
Right. Look, I mean, you get Taylor Rogers and you get the Nelson Lamet, mm-hmm. two legit arms and two very top prospects as well. So, look, as a Milwaukee native, it, like the sticker shock of hearing that at first, it's like, really? We're Brewers, you trade away one of the best closers in baseball. As Steve points out, though, I mean, this is a small market team, so we understand it. Right. I don't know how you felt about it, Mike, but I was like, after taking a couple days, like, I understand it. Yeah. I get it.
He's been in a rumor mill from a trade standpoint for a couple years. I think the Dodgers might have flirted with Hader a couple years ago as well, though.
Well, an arbitration, mm-hmm. your comment where he was set to get a very, very big raise. So anyway, we just wanted to start with that, Steve, because we had to get your thoughts. And any Wisconsinite right now, they've got takes on the Brewer trade deadline. How about what you just wrote about, though, this week in Point Spread Weekly? Again, another number of our analysis featured in the College Football Betting Guide as well here, where you're breaking down all the quarterback rankings, which I found fascinating. I guess we can start in the Big Ten, where you're going to see, right, C.J. Stroud. He is the Heisman favorite. I would imagine he tops your list there. But after that, a quarterback list that is pretty deep there in the Big Ten. Where did you go from there? And also, what criteria were you using here to come up with some of these rankings?
Well, I tell you what, there's a lot of criteria I look at. One, you got to look at initially the raw talent that these players were viewed with coming out of their high school ranks, to how they've produced so far, whether or not they've been a starter, whether or not they're going to be in the same system this season, and the overall prospects for that team and how big a numbers that guy's expected to produce this season. So there's a lot that goes into it. I usually get a ton of debate about this, but again, this is my personal opinion, nothing more than that.
You know, Steve, I feel like I can apply these rankings too. I'm looking at Aiden O'Connell, Purdue, and the fact that he's high up on your list here. Now, you're talking about competing in the Big Ten. This is going to be opposite of C.J. Stroud, obviously. And maybe there's an opportunity from a win total standpoint for Purdue, even from a divisional surprise standpoint, from a betting perspective, because of the high ranking of Aiden O'Connell.
Yeah, that's one real good way to look at this, Mike. And if I was to make a couple observations after I completed this, one, there's just a ton of transfers out there that started somewhere last year and are in a starting position this year. Two, there are two leagues amongst the group of five that are sort of maligned this season that have pretty solid quarterbacking play heading in, and that's the ACC and the Pac-12. I actually judge those conferences in terms of quarterback play a little higher than the Big Ten. And I don't think you would get an Aiden O'Connell up in a top three in either of those other two leagues.
Well, I think about the ACC too, because mm-hmm. that's a league where you've got the presumptive favorite in Clemson, and we have no idea who's going to be the starting quarterback this year. So how did you end up looking at those rankings when you have Cade Klubnik, who is basically he's the true freshman coming in? He and Duje Uliagalelei in a lot of places now, Steve, are essentially at the same price to win the Heisman Trophy this year. How did your rankings end up turning out? Where did those Clemson guys end up on your ACC ranks?
Yeah, well, I think obviously you had to drop DJ after the season he had last year, and I think he's going to get another shot here to make it happen. He was just a highly touted quarterback coming out of high school, and the Notre Dame game his freshman year, obviously he showed what he could do. That was a little better Clemson team overall. If we get back to that level of a Clemson team, which I have them as the fourth highest power rated team in the country this year, I think DJ is going to have a much better season. So I've seen him as low as 10 or 11 in quarterback rankings. I bumped him up to 8, but I think he has a much higher ceiling than that.
See, that's interesting because here he is ranked pretty low, I think, within the ACC as a quarterback position, a key position. But yet Clemson is the favorite, a betting favorite for that conference. It's like it doesn't add up to me a little bit. I mean, I'm looking at your ranking on Devin Leary from a stability standpoint. I'm looking at how many starters they have returning to in that big game that they have later on in the year against Clemson. He's the number one ranked quarterback in the ACC, and it's like maybe there's an opportunity right there with NC State.
agree with you 100% here, Mike. I think if NC State is to ever get Clemson, it's got to be this season. Potentially next year if Leary sticks around for another season. But they're in good shape this year as far as their veteran leadership. And I guess the way the program's trending overall to maybe make a run at the ACC title this year.
Again, Steve Mackinnon joining us right now on the Lombardi line. Steve, you talked as well about the Pac-12, a conference you feel like is maybe not getting as much love as it should be from a raw quarterback position and the depth that they have there. For Caleb Williams, who is the most notable quarterback piece coming into that league this year, goes to USC. Where did he fit into the ranks, and how did your, say, top five end up looking there in the Pac-12 this year?
Well, I put Williams right at the top. Obviously, he had a huge year for Oklahoma. It's going to be in the same basic system this year with Lincoln Riley. So he's got to be the most highly touted quarterback in that league. I actually put Dorian Thompson-Robinson of UCLA in number two, just basically on his veteran leadership and the ability he brings to from a dual threat perspective to run that UCLA offense. Then rising out of Utah, I put Bo Nix up there. Bo Nix is a very controversial quarterback, if you will, in a lot of ranking systems. I like Bo Nix personally. I've seen a lot of great play from him. He's a gritty type of guy that I think is going to get you wins. And I wouldn't be surprised if he has a very big year that at Oregon. And then I got Cameron Ward, the FCS transfer, going into Washington State, coming out of Incarnate Word, had 47 TDs last year. He can really sling the ball around. Wouldn't be surprised if he puts up big numbers for Washington State.
Steve, over in the Big 12 Conference, a lot of newcomers when it comes to quarterbacks, right? And I just wonder... could that conference, I think a lot of people have the opinion it's going to be wide open. Stability standpoint, it's just not existing like you see in other conferences. But all the newcomers, is there an opportunity for betters here in this conference in these schools as well?
So you have to think so. Yeah. This is another wide open situation here. The one I have ranked right now at top is Dylan Gabriel, only because of his experience and the prolific stats he put up for UCF. In Oklahoma, he's got a shot to do that. It's not a certainty, though. Quinn Ewers, obviously big potential in that Texas offense for Steve Sarkisian. But if you want to look for, if you want to call it stability, maybe down at number five, where I have Spencer Sanders, Oklahoma State, multi-year starter there, coming off a season in which they were so close to a Big 12 championship. That's a potential bet right there you might be looking at.
Let's get one more in quick here, Steve, on the SEC. I think anybody would say Bryce Young going to be your number one quarterback out of Alabama. Who's a guy outside of Young who you are really, really high on there in the SEC quarterback list?
Well, it's just that after what he produced last year, I think you got to look at KJ Jefferson, just a load for Arkansas, big kid. Another dual threat, very hard to bring a guy that's 245, almost 250 pounds down. I think the wild card in this situation, though, in the SEC this year is Spencer Rattler. Are we going to get the Heisman favorite that was at the outset of last season? Are we going to get the one who struggled against Texas and was eventually benched? If South Carolina gets the five-star Spencer Rattler, this could be an interesting race in the East Division there. So a lot of interesting things going on in SEC this year for quarterback play.
Spencer Rattler, number three on the Steve Mackinnon SEC list. What did you say? Your lists are always controversial. I'm sure some people are going to be like, what, Steve? Spencer Rattler? What? Third on the list. And for all of these lists, again, check out Point Spread Weekly. We've also got the College Football Betting Guide out now as well, which Steve played a very, very big role in. Follow Steve at Steve Mackinnon. These are such fun exercises to do, Steve. Can't wait for football to be back here. It's only a few weeks away for college football. So thanks as always, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, have fun in Wisconsin.
Hey, will do. Spread Eagle Lake, baby. Only a week away, Pritch. When we return, we recap the MLB trade deadline, talk about some of the action today. That's next.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Turn a loss into a win with the king of sportsbooks. Place a one-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any Major League Baseball game if all four legs of the parlay hit. But one, I should say all legs of the parlay hit, but one, you'll get your stake back and free bets up to $25. Log into your account or download the app and sign up with BetMGM to take advantage of this offer all season long. Just opt in to the one-game parlay insurance promotion, then place a one-game parlay wager with four legs or more on any Major League Baseball game. If you miss only one leg on your wager, you'll receive up to $25 back in free bets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 20 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credits. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Nevada, New York, or Washington, D.C. What a day yesterday was, Mike. Trade deadline. It has come and gone in Major League Baseball. A couple of games first, though, before we give our thoughts on the trade deadline and how we see maybe some of the futures right now, because we have two games on the docket right now already underway. 1-0 lead for the Blue Jays in Tampa Bay right now, and a Teoscar Hernandez RBI double there. So big series between a couple teams fighting for wild card positioning. Rays have not exactly been tearing it up recently. I'd lost on them over the weekend, bet them, thought it was a nice spot against the Guardians. Looked pretty shaky returning home over the weekend, and I go down last night to Toronto, down 1-0 right there in the top of the second. Also nothing between Philadelphia and Atlanta in the bottom of the second. Austin Riley with his 32nd double of the year, though, leading off the bottom of the second. I don't know if you saw Spencer Strider last night, but, I mean, oh, my God,
yeah.
This guy's good.
Yeah.
13 strikeouts. Career high for him. It was just an absolute avalanche there for Atlanta after they went down early to the Phillies last night. So, look, we talk so much about San Diego
right.
and everything they did at the deadline. But, and I know that's a team in the Mike Pritchard portfolio, mm-hmm. a team you've been watching very, very closely all year. But it's like, how do you compare them to teams like the Mets and the Braves, who, if you're looking at the odds board now, Padres and Braves coming out of the trade deadline, pretty much the same odds,
right.
depending on the book in the National League. Atlanta was very active as well. They get Raisel Iglesias to bolster the bullpen from the Angels. Get Jake Odorizzi, maybe could be a fifth or a sixth starter down the stretch, who has been very, very good when healthy for Houston in the past. They trade away Will Smith, one of their situational lefties, to get Odorizzi. So you have a Kenley Jansen, Raisel Iglesias back-end bullpen. You've got a lineup that is now clicking on all cylinders. And while we talk, rightly so, about one of the biggest deadline deals, maybe the biggest deadline deal in Major League history with Juan Soto to San Diego, the question becomes, where do you rate Atlanta and San Diego looking at them together? Because I think you could still make the case that Atlanta is a better team right now than San Diego, even with Juan Soto making his move there to the West
Coast. Atlanta has had to adjust all year long, too. I mean, Fred Freeman, all these guys are gone. And so I give Atlanta, the Braves, a lot of credit. You think about the Mets, they got off to a historic start. You have Scherzer and DeGrom back now. Bass is going today. They have a great rotation in terms of a closer, too, outstanding with Diaz. But the Braves are only 2.5 games back. Think
wild.
About that for a minute. It's very wild. But Jensen, too, at the back end, you probably need some help back there from a relief pitching standpoint, even a closing standpoint. Because I don't know how reliable he will be when it comes to those situations, you know, the injuries and just the track record, too. So to bolster the bullpen, I think Atlanta, teams like this, teams that pedigree championship teams, they figure it out, Ben. And for me, as a bettor, I lean on that. I lean on it doesn't matter the sport. Can the pedigree prevail? Can it come through? Can it rise to the surface? And if you see signs of that, there's an edge for you as a bettor right there. So I don't know what's going to happen down the stretch between the Mets and the Braves. I'm excited, though, because you look at both teams, they're all in for it. And you know, the Phillies, we'll see what they can do, what they can muster up. But no, the Braves right there in that race, in that division right there with the Mets as well.
And you look at it right now, Padres, at least at BetMGM, mm-hmm. plus 450, Braves 5-1. And yeah. I'd also add here, I mean, you look at the wild card standings right now, and you realize, I mean, Atlanta, for what it's worth, too, 98 win pace, and they're
right.
still two and a half games back in the division. But when you look at the wild card standings right now with Atlanta, this is a team that is a healthy 7.5 game lead over the third place wild card team, 4-game lead over the Padres right now. So likely, if you are saying, well, all right, San Diego, I mean, how could you not be all in on them right now? They've got the roster. They have Fernando Tatis Jr. set to return soon. They have a real manager this year in Bob Melvin. How could you not? But when you look at the number, San Diego's in a position where whether it's Philadelphia or St. Louis, they're probably going to have to pitch Joe Musgrove in that win or go home wild card first game. Then you would not have the home field for a best of three game series with Atlanta, which is this year the second wild card round. That just all of a sudden, like right off the bat there, Mike, when you think about the depth of the National League, especially those teams at the top, makes plus 450 a really difficult sell for me. If you didn't already get in at 9 or 10 to 1 on more of a speculative bet when it seemed like the rumor mill was churning towards Soto, I just don't know how you make a wager like that right now. And you still give Atlanta a puncher's chance. Maybe there could be some value on the Braves with that number dropping a little bit. Or you could just wait and play this out series by series, because that will be a really, really tough out once we get to the postseason.
Yeah, you really can. I mean, I think I just mentioned pedigree, and, you know, on the network I hear variance a lot, and I think there's that comes into play with the Padres right now. Even Tatis, you can be excited about him coming back, but what kind of player is he going to be? You know, Soto, he still has to fit in. Josh Bell still has to fit in that lineup. As potent as it looks on paper, it still has to mesh and work, whereas we've seen the Braves already produce the way that they needed to. And yes, they've added. We'll see how those parts fit in. But a lot of moving parts out there with San Diego. You said Musgrove, but what about Darvish? I mean, that guy's been a bulldog right?
Look, him too. They have the guys to throw at the very top. Atlanta, you could look at, though, they're top of the rotation too. Mm-hmm. And here's, by the way, what the Padres' new-look roster would look like. So, yes, you'd be going Musgrove probably in that winner-go-home wildcard game, and then you could go Darvish, Manaea to start a best of three. So that's not bad. Atlanta, you just have to ask yourself, all right, you have such a good top-line rotation. It's just for a presumptive rookie of the year in Spencer Strider, who's not thrown this many innings ever, how are they going to handle his usage down the stretch? What will you get out of Strider, who would be that kind of second or third guy? Max Fried, just an elite level ace. Mm-hmm. Where does Charlie Morton mix into that? Kyle Wright has been so good this year for the Braves. Where does he mix into your rotation as well? And then what do you get out of Jake Odorizzi, who's battled some of the injuries? So we saw a second ago what the Padres roster would look like. Josh Hader now leading that bullpen. It's really, really good. As far as some of the other pitchers, though, that were traded yesterday, and we focus so much of our programming here at the network on specifically the Soto deal, we have the full list of all the pitchers that were dealt. You know, the one that I am really high on, at least for a team who has been pretty disrespected by the market all year, Mike, is the Minnesota Twins, where they already get Jorge Lopez early in the day from Baltimore, who, look, good for Baltimore to get a nice haul back for top prospects in return for a guy who you are selling at the peak of the market. But, look, a really, really solid closer in Jorge Lopez, who bolsters a bullpen that has been heavily taxed this year. Tyler Mahle, though, 4.40 ERA this year, but a 3.20 expected ERA. And so a guy who has been pretty unfortunate, only about a 68.6% strand rate. You would expect that to be a little bit higher. And he's the first guy we have on our list here. That, to me, is a big addition, where you go from Cincinnati, not an easy place to pitch, to Minnesota, a team desperate for some consistent starting pitching. That, to me, of all these names on the list, that's the guy I think I'm the highest on of anybody. And Minnesota, still, you can find him right around a pick him or plus money to win the AL Central. Not a lot of love being given all year in the betting markets to Minnesota.
They got to do it to believe it, I guess, at this point, Ben. I mean, Tyler Mahle, he's in a great situation when you go from that team to this team that's competing this way. So you're supposed to elevate your performance. And one advanced metric, if you want to call it an advanced metric, it's really not advanced, but that saved my bacon this year has been WHIP. It has been. Mm-hmm. You can look at ERA, you can look at all these other advanced metrics out there, but WHIP,
keeping it simple,
I'm applying it. And when you're in a range of average to above average to great, now you're talking to me. And so he's right around the above average when it comes to 1.25 in the WHIP category. So I like the fact he doesn't make a lot of mistakes for this team, too. And they're in a fight. But I think he should elevate his performance down the stretch here.
Look, and walks and hits per innings pitched. It's a great indicator of how efficient is a guy and how is he able to, like, when he's giving up the hard contact, is he doing it with nobody on base? And is he avoiding the messy, messy innings? So Mahle, big addition, really like that for Minnesota, a Twins team that came into play yesterday, just a one-game lead there in the AL Central. Speaking of former Reds, now on new teams in the American League, this is a game coming up. We have a bunch of day baseball today. Three games about to start at the top of our next hour. Really the highlight, though, Mike, it's Luis Castillo, who makes his Mariners debut in New York against Gerrit Cole and the Yankees. I was just at Yankee Stadium Sunday, watched the Yankees bullpen blow a game late to the Royals. Have not been playing their best baseball as of late. July was by far their worst month of the year. Kind of tempted to back Castillo and the Mariners today, but plus 160 is the best number you can get right now. That's an intriguing number. I don't think I'm going to fire, but man, I really like Castillo. Guy sub 280 ERA this year, and the underlying numbers back up everything he's been doing for Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his whip too, Ben, 1.07. You know, now you're talking about great in that category. Can the lineup, though, Mariners, can they keep up with the Yankees? Yeah. I mean, that's the bet to me. I think Castillo's going to be fine. Certainly fitting in with the Mariners, but can they keep up with that Yankees lineup, though?
That's a very, very – we saw it last night. Yeah. Logan Gilbert was staked to a big lead, right. And that thing vanished in a very quick hurry. At BetMGM, minus 165 for Gerrit Cole, and the Yankees 7 is a total juiced slightly to the over. We'll talk about the other two games very, very quickly about to start when we return. Then a lot more NFL training camp news and notes in hour number 2 of the Lombardi Line.